And welcome back to another edition of Sideline Sessions with Wesley Sykes. I am, of course, Wesley Sykes, the managing editor of Coach and Athletic Director, Training and Conditioning, and Winning Hoops Brands for Great American Media Services. And you can listen to all of our previous episodes anywhere you can access podcasts, as well as any of our websites. That's coachad.com, training-conditioning.com, and winninghoops.com. And be sure to follow all of those brands on Twitter, at coach_AD, at train condition, at winning hoops, and of course myself, if you like, at Wesley Sykes _. And today we welcome to the program the newly appointed head coach of the Hofstra Pride men's basketball team and former NBA champion, Speedy Claxton. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us, Speedy. How are you?
No problem, man. I'm good. Thanks for having me, Wes.
Looking
forward to chopping up with you here.
Absolutely. Just a couple of alums here. And Hofstra is going to come up a little bit later in the program, so I'll give you a forewarning for that. Maybe some Hofstra Long Island related questions. But just to jump right into things, congratulations, first of all, but what do you hope to bring to Hofstra basketball from this head coaching position?
You know, some more excitement. I expect my team to be an extension of me out there. You know, when I was a player, I was a tough, gritty, defensive-minded guard, and I'm hoping to instill that into my players.
And, of course, I love that on-court perspective, but how about, from an off-the-court perspective, what do you hope to kind of instill from a culture-building, foundation-building for the program?
You know, I want to get back into the community, do some camps, clinics, lectures, and just get the overall Hofstra brand back out there. You know, when I was here, it seemed like everywhere you turn, you saw somebody with a Hofstra t-shirt on. Hofstra mm-hmm. basketball camp t-shirt, Jay Wright t-shirt. And I want to get back to that. I want everywhere you turn for someone to have on a Hofstra t-shirt.
Now, I love that. And again, you're kind of bringing that foundation, that sense of community, right? If I remember correctly, I mean, you're a Hempstead guy, too. So not even just a Hofstra alum, but you're from the Long Island area. So maybe speaking on the advantages from your perspective to be that coach at an alma mater, in your hometown, so to speak, what type of an advantage is that for you? Maybe from an overall perspective.
Yeah, it's definitely an advantage because, I grew up right down the block in Hempstead. So I'm familiar with the surrounding areas. I know the community. I know the neighborhood. And everybody's just excited. So I think I'm going to get that support system that you need to be successful here.
And, I think it's interesting because obviously as a former player who's gone through, all the ranks and all the, similar instances that a college player may go through today. But it's a little bit more specific when you can actually say, I've been in campus and been in this dorm room and in this athletic building and that sort of thing and be able to relate to players on that next level. Right.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I could actually point to them, my dorm room, like, yes, that's where I used to live in C Square when I lived in the towers. That was my room. Yeah, I remember going to Hofstra USA and eating mm-hmm. late at night. I remember the long walks to the gym, during the winter when it was cold. So I could definitely relate to them, and I think they like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think that builds a strong community from an alumni perspective, right? So it's not just that maybe Hofstra or any school for that matter stays connected with you through those 4 years that you're with them, but also, stays connected after and, well after you graduate and move on.
Yeah, I tell all my kids that this isn't a four-year relationship. This is a forever relationship. Once you're part of the program, your family forever, and we will treat you as such.
And one of the things I think you mentioned, just to kind of circle back to the basketball point of view, is that Hofstra, I think, for a long time has kind of been known for those gritty, undersized guards, and maybe just to a greater point, New York City You know, those New York City guards. But, you know, I think of Hofstra, you know, whether it's yourself or, you know, Justin Wright Foreman or Charles Jenkins, Eli Pemberton, or, you know, those trio of guards from the mid-2000s there with Lauren Stokes and Antoine Agudio and all of them. You know, is that something that you would like to continue to kind of be maybe a calling card, for a lack of a better term?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at this level of college basketball, whenever you have a good guard, you're going to give yourself a chance to win. And in years past, whenever Hofstra has had a good guard, we've been successful. And when we had a New York City guard, we've been really successful. So hopefully we could definitely continue that trend. We do have a young kid coming in, Jaquan Collins from New York City. He went to Thomas Jefferson High School. And we're excited about him. Hopefully he could, you know, carry that torch.
Yeah, and why do you think that is? You know, over so much time that you know, that era in New York City just tends to produce that typical type of guard that you know, attack the rim kind of fearless and is going to draw in that contact. And those scoring guards, like I said, yourself, Kenny Anderson, Sebastian Telfair, Mark Jackson, Kemba Walker. You know, is there anything that you can point to for that? Or?
Well, we're all tough and gritty. I think growing up in the New York City playgrounds, you're playing against older, experienced, more mature guys, stronger guys. So you have to be able to take some contact when you get to the basket and be able to still finish and not be a punk out there and call fouls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's kind of a little bit of a respect thing too, I'm sure, right? Yeah.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, spending a little bit of time out there, you know, playing on some of not playing, but covering some of the New York City street ball tournaments and everything. It's in a really an amazing scene, whether it's like Gaucho's Gym or going out to the Rucker Park and stuff. It's really an amazing, a whole different culture out there, too. You know, it's amazing to watch.
Yeah, that's one of the things I miss most about, you know, growing up in New York City basketball Mecca. And, you know, going to the Rucker Park and going to West Fourth and just watching hoops. Whereas now that I'm in the coaching role, I can't really go out to these parks. You know, Gersh, and they be having the slam tournament. And it looks crazy. Like, Dykeman looks so much fun to be at and watch games. And that's the one thing I miss most about being a regular person.
You
know, being a college coach, I can't go out there. But if I was a regular person, I would love to go out there and experience that atmosphere, because I think it's pretty dope.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned now, right? I'm sure your schedule is pretty busy with this past off season, everything with accepting the new reins. But maybe for you know, coaches who are making that first step from the assistant to the head coaching ranks, you know, how different has this off season been like for you? You know, aside from the workload, you know, what's kind of it been like?
Well, it's a little different, you know. In charge of a whole program now. So I'm not just, you know, recruiting and working players out. I have to oversee the whole thing. And, you know, I'm the one who's saying which recruits that we should take a stronger look at. You know what I'm saying? I'm responsible for everything. So it's been different. And, you know, when I took over the job, we had 8 scholarship guys on the team. So we had to basically fill 5 spots. And, you know, that's pretty tough. To get 5 people to commit to you in 1 year. And I mean, we've got 4 already, and I mean, it's been great so far, man.
So if you know, you don't mind me asking, you know, I am a gritty, undersized guard, you know, who's looking to play for Hofstra, maybe been looked over by, you know, some of the ACC Big Ten schools in the area. What's your pitch to me? Can you pitch me on Hofstra here?
Listen, man, I got the blueprint here. All you got to do is follow it.
That's simple, right? It's simple and to the point. Simple.
But I always tell all these kids that I talk to, I'm like, listen, I ask all my players to dream, but not just dream, to dream big. You know, I'm walking inspiration to these guys. Listen, if I could do it from here, so can you. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't matter the level of school. As long as you are given the opportunity to showcase what you can do, then you can make it.
Do you think having that track record of success in the you know, college and professional ranks, you know, is kind of a walking resume, if you will? It kind of maybe you know, gives you a little bit more clout than a you know, head coach maybe hasn't played in the NBA or at the high level college.
Yeah, absolutely, because they know that I'm not just talking to talk. I'm speaking from facts. You know what I'm saying? I've done everything that I'm preaching to you. So they know that what I'm saying to them is real.
Now, what you know, obviously with the San Antonio Spurs and Greg Popovich, who's considered, you know, one of the godfathers, I think, currently in the NBA as far as coaching is concerned. You know, what was a big coaching lesson that you took away from him in his time, or maybe just speaking with him, you know, post-playing career?
The one thing I'm taking from Pop is to treat all my players the same. And when you do that, you gain the respect of all of them. Pop treated Tim Duncan the same that he would treat the last man. And in return, we all gave him the love and respect that he deserved. But definitely want to treat everybody the same, no matter if you're a walk-on or if you're scoring 20 points for me. You're going to get treated the same.
Yeah, you know, I like this, and I bring this up so often when I have guests on here, but I'm a full-blood masshole here, even though I went to school in Long Island. So I'm a huge New England sports fan. I think of, you know, so many people make that comparison to Greg Popovich and Bill Belichick, but I also think what worked so well for the Spurs was that you had a humble leader, a humble star in Tim Duncan, who was able to receive that criticism and accept that, kind of in a lot of ways that I think you could say that for Tom Brady, is that whether it was a pay cuts or whatever. But I think that is huge, right, in a successful franchise and a winning program.
Absolutely. If you could coach your best player hard, then the other guys have to fall in line. I know that was one thing that Coach Wright did when I was here. Like, he probably yelled at me more than anybody. And he brought me into his office. He was like, "Yo, Speedy, I need to be able to get on you in front of everybody, and you need to be able to take it. And that if you do that, we could be successful." And I took it more than I wanted to, but I took it.
But, you know, and again, I think that's also the sign of the leadership, maybe knowing that, you know, with the headlines that you may come for scoring or being the leading scorer or the best player, that you also kind of have to carry that load as being the star player as well, right? You kind of have to have those strong shoulders.
Absolutely, man. When you're the best player, you have a lot to carry on your shoulders, but you're the best player and you have to do it. You have to lead by example.
And you know, take me through you know, some of those, that American East championship run, because, you know, as a, you know, I just signed my letter of intent, if you will, to Hofstra in 2006. So I was just following that March Madness tournament or the CAA tournament for that matter, with George Mason. So I've never really seen a Hofstra national March Madness tournament. Of course, last year, little bit of damper after winning the tournament here. So what was that run like going up against that, going up through the American East and getting into that first round?
It was amazing because obviously you don't get there every year at a university like this. So each and every year that I was here from freshman year to senior year, we got closer and closer and closer to that goal of reaching that tournament. And then my senior year, we finally got over the hump and got there, and it seemed like all your hard work paid off. And that was the best way that I myself could go out, you know, going out my senior year, making it to the tournament and getting that experience, because every college player wants to experience that, because it's an unbelievable experience to play in March Madness. So for that to happen at this level, I mean, it was truly amazing, man. You know, they stormed the court after the championship game. And it was just amazing. You know, you watch that so much on TV, and to actually be in it and experience it, it was so gratifying.
And then, how about on the flip side, to win that tournament, last year, the CAA, and, you know, of course, you punch the ticket, but the tournament, you know, the March Madness doesn't get held. But, you know, I feel like the last couple of years leading up to last year, Hofstra was right on the precipice. They were right there winning regular season titles, you know, multiple CAA player of the year, you know, getting to the semifinals or the finals of the CAA tournament, and to get over the hump, you know, and a tournament that's kind of tough. I feel like whether it's Hofstra or Northeastern, you know, they're kind of at a disadvantage with the tournament being, you know, held in Virginia. Yeah. I think it usually is, so that the travel's a little bit longer. I like using that excuse as a fan, but, to kind of get over that hump last year, what was that feeling like?
Yeah, you know, it was kind of like a similar situation when I was here. You know, each and every year. We kept getting closer and closer and closer. And then to finally get over the hump last year was amazing. You know, then you felt bad for these kids because then they didn't get the full experience. You know, right. We got there, we reached our goal, we won the tournament, but then to not get the, you know, the campus love and to be able to watch Selection Sunday, see who you're going up against, and then getting that experience of playing in March Madness in front of the big crowds and maybe getting cheered for because you was going to be the underdog. I mean, it just sucked.
Yeah, and you know, the whole last year kind of gets memory hold for me. So do you remember how long of a time period it was from winning, you know, knowing that you were going to be in the tournament and then finding out the tournament was canceled? You know, how long of a time was that?
It was 24 hours.
It was quick, huh? Yeah.
We won it Tuesday night. We found out Wednesday that it was going to be over.
No kidding. So we couldn't even have time to enjoy it.
We went from being real excited to really sad.
Yeah, that's tough too, because I know for Hofstra Sports, you know, you hear about the football team, and I understand the reasons behind it at all, and it's nice to see, you know, Hofstra still making waves in football as well, and still making, you know, an impact on the pro level, and making like national headlines and stuff like that. So it would have been nice to see maybe get that Cinderella story, kind of a UMBC, you know, 15, 16, 14 seed sort of thing.
Yeah. And I think we would have had a chance to win some games with that team that we had last year. Mm-hmm. We were really good. We were experienced. We played this matchup zone that teams had trouble playing against if you weren't used to going up against this. So I think we would have definitely gave some teams some trouble if we would have had a chance to play.
Yeah, and you know, if I remember correctly too, there was a shortly after, wasn't there a 3-on-3 tournament for this, and it was conferences, yeah. CAA, right, and Justin Ray Foreman won it, and it was someone from College of Charleston, I forget,
Jarrell,
as well.
Jarrell Brantley.
Correct, yes. So, yeah, I remember watching that in light of it.
Yeah, going into that tournament in the 3-on-3, I knew that the CAA would have a chance with the team that we assembled. We have four guys that were all on first team all conference, and then we kind of had each position that could really kind of like slide over. Like Justin was a great scorer. Mm-hmm. Jarrell Brantley was the matchup nightmare because he could play inside and outside. Devontae Kaycock was a man amongst boys. He was a really big physical player, and then they had a good point guard from Northeastern. Mm-hmm. So. If you wanted to play big, we could match up big. If you wanted to play small, we could match up small. If you had a big guy that couldn't really move, they could put Jarrell Brantley in as the big, and he would have a matchup nightmare. And if you had a smaller guy as your third guy, that was the opposing team big, we could put Devontae Kaycock, and then we would have the size advantage. So we could play they could play any way they wanted to play.
No, and I love the way too, because you bought into it, right? And I think I kind of watched that in light of the March Madness tournament, and it was great. I was really happy for Justin there. I think it was, what, 100K first prize or something like that?
Yeah, they got some good money to start out with.
Yeah, definitely good for them there. And again, as we switch to our, just before we shift to our next segment here, I would just like to wrap up with, your time in the Warriors front office and how you think that kind of helping build that foundation, right, with the future championship teams being involved with Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Harrison Barnes in that time while you were there. You know, how do you think that eye on recruiting can help, you know, transfer over to the collegiate level for you?
Well, I mean, it shows that I have a good eye for talent. We were able to draft Steph, Draymond, Klay, Harrison, Barnes, and that's when the organization took off at a winning rate. So I think if you have a good eye for talent, you can bring in good players, obviously you're going to be successful. And I think I have that eye for talent because obviously I've already done it at this level. You know, I brought in Elijah Pemberton, I brought in Justin Wright Foreman, mm-hmm. I brought in DeJour Bowie, I brought in Isaac Canty, and all these guys, I brought in Rokas Skousis, all these guys were all conference players under my watch.
So what do you see if these are you know, players who maybe get overlooked on first pass through or something? You know, what do you think you see in them that maybe other coaches didn't?
I mean, I just know basketball. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. basketball is my life. I've been around it from a young age. And, you know, I think playing at the highest level, I could just look at a kid and know 5 minutes into watching him if he can really play back, if he knows the game. Mm-hmm. And I think if you have a group of people that they all equally have a fair good knowledge of the game, you can have a good team. And not all I got to do is stay out the way and let them play.
So it's got to be nice, right? I mean, if you've immersed your whole life in the game of basketball, right? It's that kind of 10,000 hours theory, right? It's just kind of you know the game, and it comes perfected to you almost by osmosis at a certain point. It's maybe not something you can pick up.
Second nature at this point.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate it. And before I let you go here, I like to do this with all my guests here. So this is five questions that have nothing to do with sports. Okay, so it's going to be kind of a rapid fire lightning round questions here. And it's all Hofstra related here. So you think you're ready? You think you're prepared?
I hope so.
Okay, so first question with five questions that have nothing to do with sports. Better entree from Bocce, the tortellini amore or the lobster ravioli?
Oh, lobster ravioli.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So it's been a while since I've been back to Hofstra, probably about 6 or 7 years. But I remember in college, if you know the parents were taking me out to dinner, or if I had a little extra cash in my pocket, I want to take a lady out or something. You know, Bocce was always the it was Bocce.
Bocce is the spot. That's the move.
Absolutely. It was very nice. Vincent's Clam Bar was always nice. Yeah. Those were the two there. But you know, I was the lobster ravioli was great. I might go the tortellini amore over there as well. What's your order at Jim's Deli?
Oh, Jim's Deli, man. You know what? It depends on what time of the day I'm there.
Sure, yeah.
If I'm there for breakfast, I go French toast all day, every day.
Yeah.
If I'm there for lunch, sometimes I go wings, but then sometimes I go a turkey and cheese sandwich.
Okay. All right. So you're not, you're not getting the Dutchman or anything like that?
Nah.
You're not getting what's the big one there? The Johnny's special, right? I haven't pulled it. It's a chicken cutlet, mozzarella sticks, French fries, marinara, right? It's the 3 a.m. run, probably, right?
I'm still mad I don't have a sandwich in there. So,
well, that was my follow up question. If you were to get a sandwich on there, what would it be?
They would probably give me the turkey and cheese because that's my go to, but I can't be too mad at them because I do have a mural up there. So,
okay. Well, so would you get to build it yourself, or is that something that you would pick, or how would that work? Yeah.
It's something I would build because I'm kind of a picky eater. So it's kind of a dry sandwich. So it's really just basically turkey and cheese and bread. Like it's no mayonnaise, it's no lettuce, no tomato, nothing.
That was my lunch for a good period of time. I hate mayonnaise. So I think give me a nice turkey and cheese, on white bread or some Wonder Bread. That's perfect.
And I'm good. Give me some Lay's, some classic Lay's potato chips. I'm easy.
Maybe even put them in the sandwich. But I don't want to get too crazy.
That's a must. I can't eat a sandwich without potato chips in it.
Okay. I love it. Okay. Now we're going to go on campus here. Your favorite on campus dining option. So maybe as a student, and then maybe now, as a coach, maybe you're going to the alumni rooms.
When I was a student, I used to love going to Hofstra Deli across the mm-hmm. street on the other side of campus. I loved the cheeseburgers. I mean, I think I had the cheeseburger every day of my life when I was in school.
The double cheeseburgers. I remember those. Amazing. Oh, yeah. You get the waffle fries and everything.
Oh
yeah.
My God. So good. That's where all my points on my meal card went to.
I love the, I love the Dutch treats. That was one of my favorites. I love the Nassau Suffolk.
Love Dutch treats. The rest, the supermarket.
Yes. Yeah. And then, you had the Kate and Willie's there, which I think.
I used to always get the chicken cutlet at night.
Yes, I love the chicken cutlet. I love the barbecue rib sandwich. The chicken parm, you can't really go wrong with for a long period of time.
Yeah. Oh, so, man, you bring back memories now, man.
I know, right? I've heard they got, California Pizza Kitchen, I think, was just added in now I graduated.
They're big time now. They have Brooklyn Pizza. They have some good stuff here. Some good options.
Really? So I remember in the student center too. I loved the Asian food. Whenever they had the General Tso's chicken or the orange chicken, that line would always be huge. The wraps were great as well, though.
But they still have that station. I mean, the student center has changed so much. Like if you walk in there now, you're like, wow, this is. I'm talking about anything you could imagine you want to eat. is going to be in there. If you want a smoothie, they have a smoothie station. If you want Asian, there's an Asian station. If you want breakfast and it's in the daytime, you could get breakfast. If you want chicken sandwich, fries, burgers, they have that. I mean, it's pizza. You want pizza, they have a pizza station. It's really remarkable in there.
I love it. And just all with a swipe of a meal plan. I love that. That's the best part. It catches up on you. You know, at the end, you're selling it like currency, you know, trying to trade at the end of the year, trying to get the last meal. Right. All right. Last question here. I feel like I know the answer because these were the best campuses to live on, but the best dorms to live on campus. Right. It's probably C Square. Right. It's for the athletes.
Yeah, it's funny because it's changed now. Like back when I went to school, C Square was the move. That's where all the athletes lived. If you lived in C Square, you was probably an athlete. But like these kids, like the kids on my team, they actually like the towels for some reason.
Really?
But yeah, it's weird to me. I'm like, this how? Like when I was in C Square, like it was like a party every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was you walk to the gym. You was around. You was around other athletes.
Mm-hmm. I think the downside of C Square is like you're like on the furthest side of campus, right? So that's the longest walk to go over there.
Walk to class.
But I love that. And then when they added the Netherlands freshman complex, they're both kind of like the same, where it's kind of more communal, right? It feels like it's like a over 55 community where everyone's kind of in their own condo, and then you have that big courtyard right there. It's kind of nice, right?
It's easy to move.
You know, two floors. Yeah. You're not going up 12 stories or anything.
That was the other thing I liked was you walk up one flight of stairs and you're in your room, and you don't have to take an elevator if you live in the towers. You have to wait for the elevator.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, absolutely. And who knows if the elevators work? Yeah, I'm just kidding. The elevators always work. Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Fire drill at 2 a.m. You got to walk down 10 flight of stairs if you're on the 10th floor.
I'll never forget. So I lived on the fifth floor of NASA, and I remember moving out. We moved to Duncan Road my junior year, right behind Popeyes.
Yeah.
And my roommates and I were moving a 3-seat sofa sleeper couch down the 5 stories of of Nassau, Suffolk, and it was like May or June, so it's like 90 degrees, there's no AC, and just, three of us were just getting caught, and we're just yelling like pivot, it was a nightmare.
The good old days, man. The good old
days. Yeah, exactly. So that's it. I think you survived 5 questions that have nothing to do with sports. How do you think you fared?
I think I did pretty good.
I think so too. This was nice, running down memory lane with you a little bit. I think the wife and I are planning a trip to New York around Christmas time or so. So we're definitely going to have to make a stop over. Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. I would definitely love to do that here. So thank you so much, Speedy, for taking the time out to speak with us today. Where can the people get in touch with you on social media if you'd like them to, of course?
On Instagram, no, on Twitter, I'm Speed Demon. And then on Instagram, I'm speedy_clax10.
I love it. Okay. And then once again, you can follow all of our brands on Twitter, at coach_AD, at train condition, at winning hoops. And then myself, as always, if you like, at Wesley Sykes _. And you want to be following all those accounts, not only to stay up to date on all of our news and information, but also to get a first look at who our next guest will be for our 17th episode, which will be released on June 3rd. But until then, sports fans, I'm Wesley Sykes, and thank you once again for listening to Sideline Sessions, and thank you, Speedy.
Thank you for having me, man. This was fun.
Awesome. Thank you.